As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. How are you doing tonight, Allison?
Better than you.
Yeah, I had a little tumble this weekend. Fell down the stairs. I'm okay. My ankle, however, is not.
You have a cool boot, though.
Yeah, I'll be in a boot for a little while. How boot that?
That's for Canadian friends.
No, but I'm okay. Just a couple weeks in the boot, I think. And then
you'll have the foot of a 17-year-old.
Guess what's new, Allison?
Books.
That's right.
It's usually books. It's a safe answer.
The second edition of The Witch Cloud is in. You can get it at our Etsy shop. You can get it at Bandcamp, the Stone Breath Bandcamp. Of course, either place, I'll sign them. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a signed copy. The second edition adds a few more pages. It adds an appendix about the haunted bridge on Solomon Road. Adds some new illustrations and a photograph of this guy. I'm pointing at myself for the listeners.
Not some random person floating in the background.
In front of the hermit, Herr Thomas's cave, because I talk about him a little bit in the appendix. These are available. Like I said, they're in our Etsy shop. They're at the Stone Breath Bandcamp. There are options there. You can either buy them with the download, so you get the full audiobook, the podcast, the music we did, and the bonus podcast we did with Soraya, and the book. Or you can just buy the book by itself. Links to Etsy and Stone Breath Bandcamp are in the show notes. Our Etsy shop name is Lost Grave. If you type in Strange Familiars, you should see our stuff come up. And the Bandcamp is stonebreath.bandcamp.com. The sticker giveaway is still going on for the rest of March. That's the new Strange Familiars vinyl stickers. They're black, red, and white with the witch's eye in red. Black background, witch's eye in red, and Strange Familiars text in white. Any purchase from Etsy, $20 or more, you get the new Witch's Eye sticker. We'll just throw it in with the order. any purchase on Etsy of $50 or more, and we'll throw in the whole set of vinyl stickers. We have 4 Strange Familiars vinyl stickers now. The original Awoken Tree in black and white. We have the new Witch's Eye in black, white, and red. We have 2 full-color stickers, William of the Fiery Flowers and Hans Trapp, both episode artwork I did for those 2 episodes. You can buy that set, but like I said, if you order something over $50, we'll throw the whole set of stickers in with the order. All right, on tonight's show, we're going to be talking with Cheyenne, who has some stories of UFOs and orbs. And then we get into talk about reincarnation. She believes she is reincarnated, not just a reincarnated person. She believes she is a wolf reincarnated as a person.
Tonight we're talking with Cheyenne, who has a number of experiences, both, I guess, in real life, as we say, and in the dream world, although I kind of hate to separate the two sometimes, because I think, at least lately, I've begun to think that dreams kind of matter when it comes to this stuff. They kind of play into it somehow. But we'll get into all that. How are you doing tonight, Cheyenne?
I'm doing good. I'm slightly nervous, but also very, very excited. I've been wanting to do this for a while, so
well, thank you for. Thank you for coming on and sharing your stories. So I know you have some, quote unquote real world. Like I said, it's hard to separate the stuff sometimes, but let's go ahead and talk about these encounters you've had. You mentioned one when you were little that was kind of in the woods, maybe not a Bigfoot thing. You want to start with that?
Yeah. I was living up in Morgan Oaks Apartments in Woodruff outside of Minocqua. I live in Wisconsin. So it was obviously high density woodland, and my mom and I decided to go for a walk in the nearby woods. It was about, the sun was setting. It was probably like late summer. It was getting kind of chilly. We always like to go in the woods over there because there's this really cool tree that had, for whatever reason, always had like a strange accumulation of animal bones. I don't know if like teenagers or whatever would hang out there and just like collect stuff, but I always thought it was really cool.
That's interesting.
So we wanted to go over there. Yeah. So we wanted to go over there and kind of check it out. We never really had gone into those woods that often aside from hanging out in that tree. So we're like, okay, well maybe we'll go a little bit deeper in the woods. And it was starting to get dark out. So my mom has not the best sense of direction, but I had a feeling that we knew where we were. But then I started to really feel kind of disoriented and not quite panicky, but just kind of didn't really feel like I had the best sense of direction like I initially did. It felt like time had slowed down a little bit. It felt like, I don't know, like a strange mix of like time dilation, if that's the best way to describe it. It didn't feel normal. But then we were finally able to like find our way out. And when we got out, we realized we were only that far into the woods. And we heard this, I don't even know how to describe it. It was very loud and kind of, the vocals were very like stretched out. It was like a very loud, long call. It wasn't broken up or anything like that. And I thought maybe it was maybe like a large deer or an elk or something like that. But I tried looking up the vocal calls for that and it just didn't match up. It didn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And for the area, not to say that we don't have large cats or bears or anything, but since it is a sort of populated area, people don't really see them around there. They're not common. And I looked up those calls too. And I'm just like, this doesn't sound right. And from hearing previous Bigfoot calls, it did give me goosebumps when I have heard the variety of Bigfoot calls. I'm like, okay, that sounds a little bit like that. But I'm not going to go out of my way and say like, oh, I heard a Bigfoot when I was walking around the woods with my mom. It just struck me as odd.
No, but when you combine like, okay, so you have the tree with the bones, you have the weird feelings, you have the getting sort of lost when you shouldn't have been, or the time dilation, and then the calls on top of it, it's kind of like this where you start checking these different boxes. Like, Okay, yeah. If it was one or two of these things, but when you start combining all these things, you know, maybe not Bigfoot, but maybe something weird, you know, something else.
Right.
Weird. Yeah.
It definitely felt odd. And like I said, you know, because there was a pond nearby, and we'd always, during the day, we'd go and catch frogs and everything. Like that. It never felt strange, but for whatever reason, after all those years of going over in that stretch of the woods, it didn't feel like it usually did.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the atmosphere felt very creepy or like heavy. It had just like a very strange presence to it. And we're like, all right, let's go home. I don't want to be out there anymore.
Yeah.
And like I've been living in the woods for years and like never, you know, I'd go barefoot, pitch dark, you know, my parents would call me back up to the house and I refused to come in. And the forest never creeped me out. But like that, you know, dusk, I'm like, yeah, this is... It didn't feel right.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's, you know, there's times where I was a little kid on the farm. I'd walk through the woods night and day, no problem. I had, you know, no fear. But there's other times, including times as an adult, where I'm like, ugh, you know, it could be broad daylight. And I get in a place, I'm like, yeah, this isn't, something's not right here.
So right.
And you just want to move along.
Yeah, just listen to those instincts, you know, it's, you're there for a reason.
Mm hmm.
I guess when I was little, my grandma told me this story. I was too young to remember. My grandma's mother, unfortunately, had, this might be a little, it's hard. My grandma's mother had committed suicide at a young age.
Mm.
So my grandma was, you know, spent most of her life raising herself.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one day that my sister and I, my younger sister, she's 3 years younger than me. My grandma and grandpa would take care of us a lot when my parents were at work. And I guess one evening, my grandma was changing my sister's diaper and I had a tendency to wander off and get into stuff. And I'm just like a little kid. So I ended up going into the kitchen and I think my grandma said I was like getting into the utensil drawer or something. I was doing something I wasn't supposed to. And my grandma kept calling me over, like, Cheyenne, get back over here. And I guess she looked up and like a partial apparition of her mom was like standing next to me. She said from just like the shoulders up, you know, you could see like the head and face, like the face. She knew it was her mom.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I just like looked over at my grandma. I'm like, what? I was just talking to her and she dissipated. I have no recollection of this, but...
You were talking to your grandmother or you were talking to the apparition?
I was talking to the apparition.
Oh, okay.
Sort of my great-grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And when my grandma tried to call me over, I guess I told my grandma, I'm like, what? I was only talking... I was pretty much my grandma was talking to a ghost.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But yeah, when my grandma told me that, I'm like, I don't remember that. I don't know if it was so little.
But she could actually see the apparition there with you.
Yeah, yeah. She said she was kind of standing over me. I was probably just telling me, like, not to be messing around with it. Try not to get hurt, you know, just being protective.
I mean, lots of stories about, you know, kids, you know, talking to the air. But you rarely hear somebody, like, turn around and seeing what they're talking to. That's very interesting.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't have any recollection of the actual, like, occurrence happening. I definitely believed my grandma right away when she told me, because obviously one, that's a very hard subject to bring up at all, you know, talking about your mom like that after what happened, and just the sincerity in her voice when she seemed definitely very genuine with bringing it up to me. It just kind of felt like, you know, maybe it's the right time
mm-hmm.
I think we were already on the subject of talking about ghosts anyway. It's always just been like a fascination of mine is paranormal and everything. So any opportunity I can get to talk about it, I'm like, just go.
I understand that.
I've had experiences with seeing orbs mostly. A couple stories of that.
Inside or outside?
One was inside in my bedroom at my parents' house. And then the other one was outside. I don't know if you've heard of, it's like a state park, Aztalan.
I'm not sure.
It used to be like a colonized like Native American settlement along the river, probably like halfway to Madison from Milwaukee.
Okay.
But yeah, there's like these giant mounds there that I don't know. I forgot the history of it in terms of like if they're burial mounds or like maybe ritual sites. Mm-hmm. It was a very ceremonial vibe to it. People say they have a lot of crazy experiences there. And I decided to go with a friend a couple summers ago. It was beautiful out. There's like a lot of fireflies and, you know, by the thousands. It was a very magical experience. Lots of mosquitoes though. That was a nightmare. But yeah, we were walking up to one of the big mounds and I saw, I want to say it was probably with like the radial like luminescence. I probably like the whole thing was about the size of like a golf ball.
Okay.
But it was like very, I want to say white in the center, but you know, it would look at the light concentration was so dense in the center and it radiated outwards into this bright red ball. Only for a few seconds, it like floated up towards the top of the mound and disappeared. And like immediately I'm like to my friend, I'm like, did you see that? And he's like, no, what do you, he didn't catch it.
Oh, so, rats.
Yeah, I missed it. I'm like, it would have helped if I had backup. But it was just for like a moment, you know, I thought maybe it could have been like a trick of the eye with the lighting and all the fireflies around. But like looking back on it, I'm like, no, that was a lot bigger than a firefly. And just like the way it moved. And obviously the color was not like your normal yellowish, you know, sometimes they have like a greenish tint to them.
Right, right, yeah.
It's like a bright red ball. So that was cool. That really stuck with me.
And what did the one in your bedroom look like?
The one in my bedroom was smaller and it was more gold, kind of like a goldish white color. And it was kind of a little bit more like glittery, I guess, if that makes any sense. And it was right by my door was, I always have my door closed and it was right by my door and it kind of like hovered over near my trash can and then kind of slowly faded off. I don't know, I may have gone through the door. It was kind of like floated in that direction.
Mm-hmm. About how long did you see it?
Only a couple seconds. It was enough for me to like focus on it and like watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like a weird eye floaty or whatever.
How old were you when you saw this?
Oh man, this was, I was probably 22 about. So yeah, I've been back and forth between my parents' house on and off throughout the years. So
I did, yeah, the
I was
same
probably
thing.
Like 21 or 22.
Yeah, I did the same thing. Those years after college kind of bounced back and forth a bit.
Now, you know.
Yeah. Did anything else happen in this room, or was this just a single occurrence?
Not really. I feel like there's been occasional presences. Like when I've been going through like really rough times, I kind of feel like I don't know if I attract that sort of energy or if it's something that's just kind of in my head. I'm like manifesting, you know, like a heaviness. But there's been times in my bedroom where I felt like there was something in there, not necessarily having any bad intentions or whatever, but just kind of like observe. The closest thing I compared to is just like something observing me, but nothing ever distinctive that I can remember besides that orb. And I remember talking to it. I don't know why I just like decided, I'm like, oh, hi. Not expecting any response or whatever, but I just talked to it like there was like a, like it was an animal or, and I had discussed it immediately. Like I texted my friend, she's a witch, and I'm like, hey, I just saw this weird gold orb thing in my room. What is that? And she's like, oh, it's just an elemental. They're harmless. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll come back if you want, I guess. I probably should say that though, knowing more about it. Gotta be more careful, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes I think things just show themselves for whatever reason. Yeah. They don't have to be bad, good, or otherwise. They're just, you know, just there.
Yeah, so, it was a cool experience. It was comforting seeing it. I felt very comforted and felt like I had a little friend hanging out, whatever it was. I think in terms of orbs, that's all that's really happened. There was one point, the first house we moved to when I moved to Milwaukee, it was just a weird thing with the Christmas tree. I think I was getting laundry in the basement and either, I can't recall if my parents were upstairs on the third level. The main level was unoccupied. There wasn't anybody down there except for my cats. So I decided to go down to the basement and do some laundry, and I heard this like loud dragging sound. I'm like, what is that? And I go upstairs, and the way our living room is laid out, we usually just put the Christmas tree in the corner. Mm-hmm. And it had moved like 3 feet from the corner. It didn't fall. I thought like maybe the cats had like knocked it over. And it was like a fairly standard size tree. It's maybe like 7 feet tall. And yeah, I thought like the cats had knocked over, but it had moved like 3 feet from the corner of where it had been set up.
But stayed upright.
Stayed upright. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm like, I tried, you know, looking around it, and there's no way that the cats could have done this. You know, it would have been like an absolute mess.
Right. Right.
It had any influence on it. So that was strange. I never figured out what caused it. You know, I asked my parents. Like I said, I don't even remember. They could have been upstairs. They could have even not been home. I might have been like just like after school. Mm-hmm. It was quite a while ago, so that part was kind of blurry. But I definitely remember coming up, and there was nobody. There's nobody in the living room. And I'm like, if they did that, why would they do that? You know, my parents aren't ones to be trolls and like, oh, let's just move the Christmas tree just to mess with our daughter.
Right, right.
This is too much hassle, and they're not going to do that. So that was strange.
Let's talk about the UFOs, and then we'll get into the reincarnation and dream stuff.
Okay. One thing I did want to mention, though, there was... I used to tell 3 UFO sighting stories, like, at once. And for whatever reason, now I can only remember 2 of the 3.
That's interesting.
I mentioned that to my ex-partner, and he's like, that's weird. Why? I'm like, I don't remember when it happened, where it happened. It's just, like, completely gone.
Yeah.
So, and it just, the more I think about it, the more frustrated I get, and the farther it seems to be from, like, being able to grasp any sort of information on it.
I wonder if at some point in the future, at some random time, it'll just come back to you, though. Because
probably. I'm hoping. Or if I get in like a deep enough meditative state, or just like walk into the woods somewhere, it just pops up. And
there's definitely been things.
Email to me.
There's definitely been things like from my childhood and stuff that I didn't consider them paranormal or related to any of this stuff or anything, but I would be writing a book or, you know, doing research or something for the podcast. All of a sudden it would just hit me. I'd be like, well, wait a minute. That's really weird. You know, and I hadn't thought about that for years. So I think sometimes they do. Something will, you know, will spark it and bring it back. I'm guessing. I don't know. But that's been my experience.
I agree. I hope so. Because, like, I feel like it's not one of the more significant ones, I would say. But then again, I'm like, I really don't remember. So maybe it is.
And right.
It's
just
gone. It's very frustrating. I'm like, what if it's like one of the better ones? And I just can't remember what it was.
Yeah. For what reason can you not remember? I mean, that.
Yeah. Like, why is it just random? Because I've been telling it for years, these 3 stories. And like, one of them just disappeared. And I have no idea.
Let's hear the 2 you remember.
Okay. So the first one was, I want to say, 2007, 2008, I was in middle school, and I was in English class, and I was looking, I think it was like during reading break, and my attention span is terrible with stuff that I'm just not interested in, so I decided to like walk over to the window and look outside, and there was this black triangle shape. The closest thing I can compare it to was like a boomerang.
Okay.
But it was really big, all black, and it wasn't facing horizontal like a boomerang does, you know, when you throw it.
Mm-hmm.
It was vertical. And it was spinning really slow, and it went behind one of the other parts of the school. I didn't catch sight of it. I know that there's like a cul-de-sac over there.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, where did it didn't go up? It didn't. I mean, it might have gone up, and I just didn't see it. It was pretty big. I thought, I was looking around, I'm like, is this somebody's toy? But it was bigger than, you know, what they had around at the time. not to say that it was like ages ago, but for 2007, 2008, where I live, people didn't really have stuff like that. And it didn't look like anything I recognize. And there was no people around. Like the field was, because we were between, there's like the middle school football field and the high school. And there was nobody outside. You know, it was like the middle of class period and there wasn't anybody around. So
if you had to estimate how big it was, what would you say?
I would say,
I know it's hard to estimate the size of things in the sky. People ask me all the time. Right. I'm like, I don't know, but you know,
it was really low. It was like, in terms of the distance, it was maybe 20 feet off the ground. And that's why I thought it was like somebody's toy.
Right. Yeah.
Something, you know, someone just brought it out to the field to mess around. Size wise, maybe if you like took a smart car and like stretched it out and bent it and folded it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the only way from other people. It's the only way I could compare it in terms of when I told the story before.
Yeah, but just roughly getting the size idea. Yeah. So
yeah, it wasn't tiny. It wasn't like a giant spaceship.
Right. And but bigger than any kind of drones that would have been around at the time. Yeah.
Like it was for it was home much use. Bigger.
Yeah. And a daytime sighting. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and it didn't make any noise. It was silent, and it was just like the way it looked, and the way it moved. I'm like, what the hell is that? And I remember immediately after it disappeared behind the building, I ran up to my teacher, and I'm like, I just saw a UFO! I just saw a UFO! I was like so ecstatic about it, and she just laughed at me. She's like, go sit down.
Get back to work.
Because I was already like that weird kid in the school, you know. Everyone was just like, oh, I'm like, all right, I'm not even gonna argue with you and try to convince you I just saw a flying object. And
right.
Never mind. I was pretty young when I saw that one. There was another one up when I was living up north, and this one was up there. I thought it was a satellite, but my grandparents used to have a cabin on a small lake near where we lived in Minocqua. I would spend the nights like just sitting on the pier, and it was beautiful, full moon or close to a full moon. Stars were out. It was very clear. I remember it was just clear, clear skies. And I remember looking up, so I'm always on the lookout for weird stuff in the sky. And I saw what I thought was a satellite, and then I was able to like focus in a little bit more, and I noticed it was like a triangle shape, not like horizontal, but like kind of similar to how the boomerang was vertical. Mm-hmm. And it was like doing like this little bouncy, like, you know, when you're skipping stones on water.
Yeah.
Similar to like the whatever original, like flying spaceship, flying saucer story, or kind of bounces like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that a couple seconds after I thought in my head, I'm like, what is that? It just took off. I don't know, like in Star Trek or whatever. It's just like that weird, like hyperspeed.
Right. Yeah. And we saw one recently. It wasn't a triangle. It was round, but it had that same behavior. It just kind of bounced around and did like some weird movements and then just shot off. Just like a rocket. Yeah. Chad and I both saw it. Yeah. I mean, other than the shape, you kind of described exactly what we saw.
Yeah, it was like, oh my God. And obviously, again, I went upstairs and I just told everybody I just saw a UFO. They're like, okay. But yeah, and there was no clouds or anything. And it was like once it kind of hit the tree line, that's when it just booked it, just disappeared. And I'm like, all right, I'm going inside. That's pretty much what I wanted to see. And
right.
It's like kind of like mentally, I'm like, oh, I want to, you know, please show me something. And occasionally I'll get lucky and something will show up, but most of the time it's completely by accident. I just happen to look up and catch something.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've seen occasional lights above the trees in my area that have either gone out or they like zoom off pretty quick, but they're nothing like distinctive, you know. They're just kind of like white, or you know how when airplanes look from far away, they just look like a white orb.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's one I saw when I was leaving work that was above the trees, and there was like a plane on both sides. I'm like, okay, you know, maybe it's just another plane. But as soon as I thought that, I'm like, that's not a plane. The light just immediately went out, and it was like gone. it's like the lights turned off. There was another one that flew over a tree once. I just like happened to catch it right when I looked up. And then I kind of like have a feeling that there's something to that with, you know, it's not always by accident that you look up at the right time and there's something there. I kind of feel like there's potentially like a subconscious pull.
We have seen these lights now so many times, that place we talk about, Site 7, but other places too, that I half believe they're, I just think they're a lot more common. People don't spend enough time in one place to sit there and wait for them to happen. I just think they're a lot more than we ever thought. Either that or they're following us around, and that sounds even crazier. So I'm just going to say I think there's a lot more of them than we'll ever knew.
I agree. Yeah, and like where I live, there's a lot of people, because living so close to Lake Michigan, there's a lot of sightings along the lake too that, you know, I have a friend, he's like super, super obsessed with extraterrestrials. He's had crazy, crazy encounters. I'd honestly recommend your podcast to him, and I can send him your information. Maybe you guys can get in touch, because he's got some wild stuff. But yeah, there's been accounts along Lake Michigan that are just like, I don't even know what to think that people have. You know, obviously the attraction of the bodies of water, and you can get into the whole portal thing and all that. Mm-hmm. So it seems like it's been picking up around here lately. Maybe it's just me looking up at the sky more or whatever. But there was one, the most recent one. I think I had mentioned it in the email. Me and my ex-partner were crossing the bridge. This is like 1:30 in the morning. We were just doing a run to the store. And we were crossing the bridge. And I think this is around the time that the California wildfires were really peaking this summer. So the air, you know, the air was already kind of a funky color. So we were crossing the bridge, and we just had this like urge to look to the right. And there was this weird light that we were still trying to figure out. Can't really judge the distance or how high in the sky it was, but it was like over the river, and it was kind of cloudy. And I think because of the smoke or whatever, it gave off this really strange orange color. What I thought was strange is that my partner saw it as like this opening to like a weird cave or like a tunnel.
Wow.
Versus me, I saw it as like my mind filled in that there was like an object, and then underneath it was like emitting light from the bottom and lighting up the clouds underneath it and kind of up and wrapping around it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was just the fact that we both saw something so different, or we're looking at something at the same time, was strange.
Yeah.
And we slowed down a little bit, you know, because it was obviously like middle of the night. There was like no traffic on the bridge. So we were able to kind of get a decent look at it. And we're like, what the hell was it? It felt like time slowed down a little bit. I think maybe just because we were just processing it and trying to figure out what was happening. We ended up wrapping back around, saw it for a split second, but once we got back on the bridge, it was just gone. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like, you know, there was like a plane that had flown off. We thought maybe, okay, it was a helicopter but the way the skyline is around where we live is it's very open, and there's really no buildings for it to go behind. And it looked like the sky had cleared too, like the clouds and stuff had gone. It was like the sky had dissipated. There was no weird light anymore. It's like the atmosphere had completely shifted. I remember my ex-partner, when we were leaving the house, he had said the energy in the air just felt very strange, like something was going to happen. And I kind of felt it too. It was just like a very kind of staticky, excited feeling. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know, you just kind of that anticipation, or you feel like something's going to happen, but you're just like, okay, let's go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because it's so late at night and things have quieted down, but it's a very odd feeling. And when we noticed that it just disappeared, we're like, okay, well, that's that.
Yeah.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Wilson, you sent the game-winning email at the buzzer, avoiding a 4:55 meeting on everyone's calendar. How did you do it?
I got a huge assist from Grammarly, an AI writing partner that helped me make my point.
96% of Grammarly users say that it helps them craft more impactful writing. Would you agree?
Grammarly helped adjust my tone to navigate tough work conversations. And it works everywhere I write, so I can quickly communicate effectively.
Your teammate used Grammarly to summarize an important document, making a three-pointer. How did he do it?
It only took one click. When everyone uses Grammarly, everything just makes sense.
You made an incredible slam dunk to end the game. The meeting was canceled, and your team will go home champions. Go to Grammarly.com/podcast to download it for free. That's Grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
So we haven't, and I'm actually kind of surprised by this when you brought it up before we started recording, we haven't talked about reincarnation too much on the show. So this should be interesting. I mean, I'm going to guess by the fact that you brought it up is you feel that you have been reincarnated.
Yes.
So what gave you, like, what was the beginning of that? I don't know either way, but I don't have the feeling that I was. What gave you the initial feeling, what, like that spark that like, oh, I think I may have lived before?
Yes, it started from a very early age. I mean, I was a very rambunctious, kind of crazy, aggressive child, but I always behaved more like an animal than a person. I acted more like a dog, I guess. I'd tear stuff up, growl, snarl at people, refuse to wear clothing. I would run on all fours all the time, stuff like that. And from a very early age, I would obsessively take shoelaces or my mom's like nylon stockings or anything I could get a hold of and like punch a hole in my pants or my underwear or whatever and thread it through because I wanted a tail.
Huh.
And my mom asked me one day when I was very little, she's like, why do you keep doing this? Like, you're taking all our, like, we have no shoelaces. Like, I need my nylons for work, whatever it was. And I'm like, I feel naked without one. Like, I feel like something's missing if I don't have a tail of some kind. The cameras show it, you can see here, right? I have a picture actually right here. I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would just do stuff like that.
Huh. Obviously the listener can't see this. It's you as a little girl with a tail attached to your clothing. Yeah.
Yeah. So anything I could get a hold of that would represent a tail, I would do that. I don't know, over the years, I think once I hit around 15 or so, I started having these like visions or flashbacks. Sometimes they would come in the form of like dreams of living in this forest and not really, and like knowing that I've never, at least in this life, never been there before. It like felt familiar, but no, I knew that like I've never visited this place. I don't know where this is. And for years, I'd like desperately been trying to find pictures of what this place was. One day I was hanging out at a bus stop with my friend. We were going out to college and the bus stop was by a mall, which was very strange to be seeing. We saw like four or five red-tailed hawks perched on the buildings, kind of facing out towards the highway. I'm like, that is weird.
Yeah, that's
they're
pretty,
very solitary.
Yes, yeah, it's pretty unusual to see them in a group like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, me and him got to talking, and I don't know what it was that, like, pulled me to look it up when I got home, but I just randomly started typing in, because part of the visions or, like, flashbacks I would get, or, like, these drawings that I kept drawing, was of, like, a lot of moss and ferns and big boulders. And it was very dense forest, and it would lead out, the trees would start to kind of break up, and it would lead out to, like, a big outlook or, like, a bluff.
Mm-hmm.
And the bluff stuck out over, like, this huge forest, no houses or trees. It was just, like, very, almost, like, frozen in time kind of feeling. And I remember I got home, and I looked up I finally found a picture. I don't know if you heard of Whitaker Point. It's also known as Hawksbill Crag in Arkansas. It's part of the Ozarks.
No, to my knowledge, I've never mm-hmm. heard of it.
Yeah, you can look it up sometime if you're interested. It's a pretty fairly well-known hiking spot for people, just because the bluff is so accessible. You can walk right out onto it. But I know for like an hour or so, I was like typing in all these forests and all these like keywords, and like forest of the bluff, forest of the cliff, blah, 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 blah. And I found this picture of Hawksbill Crag, and I immediately started bawling, just crying. And I had no idea why. I was like so confused. But instantly I just like kept on telling, I was like, that's it. That's your home. That's where you lived. I believe in my past life, I was a wolf. I was killed by two hunters around 1940. I wasn't that old when they killed me.
Mm-hmm.
I was about 3, I think.
Now, how did you gain this information?
Mostly through meditation, a lot of dream shifting.
Mm-hmm.
Just really trying to tap into it. Like, it always felt like it was there, but I felt like it was just something I really had to take the time to go out of my way to really access.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A lot of it came through just really intense dreams and meditation. Just those weird flashbacks. And then I started doing more research, and, you know, stuff really started to add up. This was around the time that poaching was pretty, pretty big
mm-hmm.
with, you know, getting rid of pests or like large predators or whatever, and obviously
right.
like selling pelts and all that, whatever they could. Yeah, I was two hunters, and they caught me, and I've always had this terrible phobia of slit throats. I know that's pretty gruesome for whoever's listening. I apologize. And I never knew why. I would immediately, any thought of it or like any visuals of that, I would immediately like feel like I was gonna throw up and pass out. I mean, I've never had any experiences in my life where I've had close calls with anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It just terrifies me, and it like triggered like a insanely illogical fear response that I never really could make sense of. And then I really thought about it. I'm like, maybe that's how I died. I remember having like this crazy vision of having one of the hunters like standing off to the side, and the other one was holding me, like I was sitting, but he was like stepping on my tail and like held my head back and, you know, cut my throat. This is very gruesome. I apologize. This might not, you know, be kept in the podcast. Yeah. So that part, but there was also when I did live in the forest, there were what people would call will-o'-the-wisps.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And they were like friends to me. It was weird. It was like a, you know, like obviously like a weird natural phenomenon, but at the same time they had like an energy to them, so they were like conscious, they're sentient in a way. They're mostly blue and about like maybe an inch and a half, 2 inches tall, and they would hover about maybe like an inch or so off the ground, but they would only hover above moss. They would never hover like above dirt or And then they'd only hang out like in the summer. They made like a sound, but it wasn't like an audible sound. It's like you heard it in your head. You didn't actually like hear it. Which.
Well, I mean, immediately I go to, I wonder if they make a sound that's inaudible to humans.
Possible, yeah. I've thought about that too. And it's like, it was like a very echoey kind of like a frequency, you know, with those singing bowls.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. that, like just like a very weird, like humming frequency, like an echoey sound. I don't know. They just kind of hung out there. Didn't really do much, but I remember I would always look forward to seeing them. They didn't have like a temperature or anything. They were just kind of, you know, wasn't like an actual flame or whatever, but they looked like fire.
Right.
You know, they just kind of fade in and out, kind of just like how a candle does. Yeah. I remember it was mostly in the summer. Obviously they like never showed up. They would kind of disappear in the fall and the winter and then come back.
I mean, do you mind if I ask some questions?
I'm go for it.
Totally curious. How did you put a date to this? Like you said, like 1940s, was it the way the hunters were dressed or was there some other way that you put a date to it?
So I think I started with kind of remembering or trying to recall what I looked like and figured out that there were red wolves in the area around that time. And then they got hunted to, I guess, extinction, at least for that area.
Yeah.
There's red wolves around, but they no longer live in that territory around late 1930s into the 1940s. And then looked up around that time what the hunter outfits looked like. They look very, very close to what I had in my like visions or whatever you want to call it.
And yeah. Yeah.
Like to this day, like I can't really look at old pictures online or whatever people dress like that, because it immediately like makes me feel angry. Honestly, I get very mad and like disgusted and like, I don't know, like a resentment that I can't really quite put my finger on. Obviously they're hunters and I have a, you know, opinion on people poaching and doing very cruel things to animals.
Right.
To begin with. But you know, just that definitely adds to it.
When you, and maybe this is a silly question to ask, you tell me, but when you access these wolf memories, let's call them, do you see from that from that lower perspective to the ground? Like as an artist, that's the first thing I'm thinking is like, do you see like kind of in those memories, do you see from that lower perspective than you would as a human? Like
height wise?
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
yeah,
so you see everything from the wolf perspective, essentially.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah.
Like, I mean, it pretty much everything's on the level. If you were to like get on all fours, it's about like that height.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Again, I don't have this experience, so to me, it's very new. Like to trying to parse out the information. Yeah. It's very interesting. Do you feel like that was the only time you were reincarnated? Or do you feel like, have you gone back, or do you feel like you could go back even further, like before that time?
I've kind of felt like I have, but there's never been enough. It doesn't feel like the memories are strong enough. Like I feel like there's something there, but I just can't quite grasp it. And that's initially how it felt before I kind of was able to tap into the stuff I know now.
Right.
With at least this most recent past life, it just felt very, very out of reach. Like it's right there, but I just can't touch it. But I feel almost like this, I'm content enough with knowing the life I have now and the one before this. I actually went on a road trip back in like 2018 and visited Hawksbill, and we didn't have a map or anything, but as soon as I got into the woods, I felt like immediately knew where to go.
Oh, that's amazing.
Like, I was with my partner at the time, you know, kept on reading like, oh, where's the cliff? Where's the cliff? I'm like, it's just keep going. It's this way. And like all the paths and everything, obviously they've changed over the years, but for the most part, the layout's pretty much the same. The path's gotten bigger and wider, and there's more because of people.
Right.
And it's not as green, unfortunately. it's really dried out a bit. There used to be a lot more, at least from what I can remember, there used to be a lot more ferns and moss and stuff like that. And now it's a little more dry. But when I got to the bluff and everything, it all felt the same. Like, I remember laying out on that cliff, the cliff face, on like summer nights, and I remember feeling how warm the rock was. There's even down to like certain textures and like smells and everything I can still remember, which is this, like, the smell of cedar for me is very intense. Mm-hmm. And when we went there, I ended up finding out that there's a lot of cedar trees, which is cool. So yeah. I don't know. It's the little sensory things that bring back a lot of memories that I never really knew were there until I experienced them, and it all came flooding back.
Do you, and I know, like, you know, this could just be your intuition, but do you think that everyone has probably been reincarnated, or, and I'm not trying to imply that there are special people that can reincarnate, I don't know how it works, I'm just saying, or do you think this is something that only a few people can remember, or do you have any gut feeling on this at all?
I think we all are. I think it's just kind of more so like a level of maybe what you were, or how intensely the, what I call like memory transfer. Mm-hmm. This is the easiest way I can like describe it, is how strong that is. And also how much you exercise your intuition. Mm-hmm. So we all have it. I mean, every living, I really do feel like every little thing from like a ant to an elephant, you know, we all have instincts, we all have intuition, we all have that sense of like tapping into that energy field. So I think we all are. I think it's just a matter of how much do you want to know?
Right.
And how willing are you to learn the things that you might not like?
And again, it might be kind of like the thing that I talk about with experiencing the other in general, mm-hmm. that it just might come more naturally to some people, in the way that drawing comes more naturally to some people, you know, and some people might just have to work a little harder at it. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, reincarnation it's an interesting idea, because somebody who, along with whatever else I have going on spiritually, I absolutely love nature, and I've always considered myself, you know, some form of animist. And you go out there and you look at nature, and everything recycles in nature. It just, everything recycles, everything recycles. So on one part, like the reincarnation thing, it, like, some part of that makes a lot of sense to me, that maybe we would be recycled in that way as well. Yeah. But again, it's, you know, it's not my experience. I'm open to it. It's just, but it's, mm-hmm. it's just not been my experience. But I often wonder if, like I said, if just certain people are more keyed into it for whatever reason than others.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. And I really appreciate you being so patient and open and listening to this. Cause like I've told quite a few people, and like my parents are very embracive of it, you know. They obviously, it didn't make sense to them at first, and it took years of really trying to explain to them, like, no, this isn't some DID, you know, like dissociative identity or personality issue. Like, this is like a genuine, I'm serious about this. I'm not like going through some phase, or, you know, it's been with me for as long as I can remember, and just like making sense of why I behave the way I did. And mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm very curious about belief in general, and I mm-hmm. think because I have Brother Richard on, and because, you know, my beliefs kind of run in that direction, I think people think I'm closed to other beliefs. I'm not. I want to learn what people believe, and I want to learn what people think, yeah. and no way am I dogmatic. I'm very interested in other theories, and I honestly, I think Brother Richard is as well. You can tell from the way he talks, but
yeah, I think
I think sometimes people get the impression that, like, I don't want to know. I'm absolutely interested in all these different theories and beliefs, or whatever you want to, you know, systems of what happens when you die, however you want to classify them. I'm absolutely interested in them.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. I wish I feel like it's coming up on more people are being more open to it. I don't know if it's just with the way the world is right now, or if we're reaching some, you know, different level of like universal consciousness or whatever you want to call it. But I think people are starting to become more open to, you know, the concept of, you know, potential like spiritual metaphysics, how science and spirituality really aren't separate. They're kind of intermingled in a way where, people break down biologically, you know, after you pass away and you degrade into the soil. But there's also, from the spiritual aspect, is there like a memory signature that gets transferred with it when something breaks down and, you know, regrows or whatever it is, or, you know, is born as something else.
And
I don't know, it's an interesting concept.
But I'm just wondering if the possibility is, and I think I know what you're going to say, because I think you feel so essentially that this was you, that your answer is going to be no, that you don't think, but that you could be accessing the memories of something else. So you're accessing the memories of something else through time or whatever for some reason. And not necessarily that it was you, but that you're accessing the memories of it. But I'm guessing that you feel so essentially, I can, you know, tell by the way you talk, you feel so essentially that it was you.
I've never thought about that. It's an interesting way to, I don't think so.
Yeah. Just because you can tell me, because I want to be careful about the way I phrase it. I don't want to suggest. One of the rules of Strange Familiars is that we don't tell people what they experienced and we don't tell people what they saw. So I don't want to ever do that. You know, so that's why I'm trying to be careful about the way I phrase things.
No, I totally understand. Yeah. You're fine. Like, however it comes out, I'm sure I'm not going to take it the wrong way.
It's interesting, though, the way you're talking about recalling this is, so I've had, you know, what I feel were quote-unquote abduction experiences. Again, I don't feel like I ever left my bed, and I don't think they were, you know, I was taken on a UFO or anything, but I had these experiences that confirmed to that sort of thing. And I was considering doing hypnotic regression, and a lot of people said, no, don't do that, because it's actually not a great thing to do. But the way that some of these people told me to go about recalling the memory is the way you're talking about recalling this past life. It's through meditation and through intense concentration and just sitting there and kind of sitting with it. And, you know, they said you're not going to get everything at once. You're going to get pieces and parts, and you'll be able to kind of put it together over time.
That's how it's been. I mean, like, this kind of really started to hit me around, like I said, like 15 years old. And that was because I was reading one of Linda S. Godfrey's books about theanthropy and werewolves and stuff like that. And I'm like, I started doing a bunch of research. And I'm like, oh, it's like, feel this way. But yeah, it didn't hit me at once where I was just having like, you know, a movie scene where you go through the tunnel and you have like the life flash before your eyes kind of moment. It was little bits and pieces of personal observation or like just the way I was behaving or, you know, like I said, the dreams, the flashbacks, the meditations, just accumulating stuff over the years. And I'm 28 now, and it's taken this long, and I feel like I only have, you know, not even a quarter of the life I lived. Mm-hmm. But it's enough for me to feel content and be like grateful that like I do know this much, and that, you know, it may or may not have happened, you know, but it feels very, very real and genuine to me. People ask me like, oh, are you just like making this up to cope with trauma or whatever? I'm like, no, I'm pretty mindful of the difference between, you know, things I've gone through in my personal life and this thing that I've had my whole life as far as I can remember. You know, like I said, pulling damn stockings out to make a tail, you know, it's like before anything really bad ever happened in my life, I was doing all this weird stuff. So
right, yeah,
it's always been with me. This is all I really tell people. It's like I just feel like I've always been this way.
Yeah, and you know, one of the tropes of reincarnation is, you know, everybody with Cleopatra, right? Everybody was you know, a Julius Caesar or whatever, you know, somebody famous or somebody, you know, a princess or a king or whatever. But no, it's interesting. It's very interesting that you just have this intense recall of being a wolf.
Yeah, just some random 3-year-old wolf with fleas living in the woods somewhere. It wasn't a pharaoh or anything as far as I know.
Right. Let's hit a couple of these big dreams.
I've had a lot of black dog dreams. I think one of the more recent ones was one with what I guess you'd deem Flannel Man and a black dog.
Oh yeah, bring it. That's
So I was in like an old an old abandoned house, and it seemed like it was kind of in a rural area. There's forest around, and I looked out the window, and there was an old man wearing a red and black flannel shirt or jacket, or, you know, like a long sleeve, and like denim pants and boots. And he had, I think he was balding. He didn't have a hat on from what I can recall. And he had a beard. And he was just taking a stroll. You know, he had his arms behind his back. He was just like walking leisurely along the edge of this tree line. And alongside him was this black dog. I don't know. It just looked like it was his pet or whatever. I didn't really think anything of it. I'm like, oh, there's this random, this guy must live here. And I don't know how I got in the house and why he was outside and I was inside, but he was walking around with this dog, and the dog kind of like walked in front of him and suddenly like kind of turned around the corner of this tree and disappeared into a black smoke, but it looked like it had like glitter in it. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it was like glittery black smoke. Yeah, the dog just like disappeared. I don't know what happened to the old man after that, but I just remember that was like the last part of the dream that I can recall was this random black dog disappearing into a cloud. But yeah, like the man himself, he wasn't behaving strangely or anything.
Mm-hmm. You've had other black dog dreams.
Yeah, another one more around that time was I was walking down a path. It was like middle of the summer, sunny day. It was one of those two tracks. And I was walking in the middle in the grassy part. And I remember looking up ahead of me, maybe 100 yards away, there was a black dog just standing there, just like staring at me. And you know how like when dogs, when your pet dog or whatever runs ahead of you and it just stands there and like waits for you?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what it was doing. But it had walked out of the woods and was just standing there, like waiting for me to catch up to it. And I'm like, I'm not going any closer to this thing. I don't know. This isn't my dog. And it ended up coming up to me, and it was it was about the size of like a small lab, like dark, really wiry hair. And I thought it was like a normal dog at first, but then I looked at its eyes and they were like a maroon, like a deep red color. And they weren't glowing. They weren't like your stereotypical like black shuck or hellhound experiences, you know, the mm-hmm. glowing red eyes or whatever. It was just like a friendly, really weird, creepy dog. And it had a book in its mouth.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it looked like it wanted to like give it to me. I'm like, I'm not touching this. And it dropped it on the ground and like looked up at me, like super excited, like it had brought me a toy or something, or like it had found something really, it was like really happy about. And I'm like, but he dropped the book on the ground and it said black shuck on the cover.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I'm not opening that. And I woke up. Huh. And I like woke up and I kind of felt bad for the dog. I'm like, I feel like I rejected him. But yeah, I was like, I'm not messing with this. I feel like this is like an invitation for trouble, so.
I want that book.
Yeah, I know. I kind of wish I had opened it.
Yeah.
And my partner at the time, he's like, well, did you open it? I'm like, no. Like, I'm not touching it. I know black dogs. I'm not messing with this. I don't know what's in there.
Do you have any feeling that the black dog dreams are in any way related to the stuff we were talking about with reincarnation and the wolf stuff?
I don't know. I feel like they're separate in a way that like there wasn't really any crossover with having interactions with them like mm-hmm. in my past life. But I feel like because of my potential receptiveness to like canine energy,
sure, yeah,
maybe that they kind of like see me as someone that they can contact, because mm-hmm. these definitely feel like contact dreams. They don't just feel like, you know, like, oh, I was watching a documentary on hellhounds and then went to bed.
Right.
Sort of thing. You know, I can tell the difference mm-hmm. between having a contact dream and just having like something I consumed earlier that day and having it show up in my sleep.
Yeah. Do you ever get dreams of being in wolf form?
I used to a lot. Yeah. And I really miss them, honestly.
Yeah. That's interesting.
I've had dreams where I've been a wolf. I've had dreams where I've been a werewolf. And honestly, I miss them very much because I've never felt so like myself or so free than I have when I'm in those dreams. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like that's like the only way I'm able to be who I really feel like I genuinely am.
Sure.
Because obviously with having like a human body, you're very limited so in a lot of ways. But yeah, I used to have a lot of shifting dreams. I've gotten into fights with other wolves. I've had dreams where I'm just like running around or hunting. Yeah, it feels very, very real, down to just like tactile stuff. You know, I can feel the grass, the dirt, or, you know, the smell, the air, the heat from, you know, if I'm having a dream with like it's daytime, I can feel the heat from the sun, all this, mm-hmm. all this stuff. I usually end up waking up both very sad, but also grateful.
Yeah.
You know, I was able to experience that.
Do you feel like those dreams are actual memories or just sort of, you know, dream recollections, I mean, in a sense, like dreaming of what was?
I feel like they're more dream recollections, mm-hmm. of like things that did happen, but I'm dreaming about them in ways that aren't necessarily like memories, mm-hmm. you know, like very, very similar to like if you have a dream about something you did in waking life, but that dream isn't a direct reaction of what you did when you were awake. It's just kind of like memory of something similar. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I haven't had a shifting dream in a while. And it kind of bums me out, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, it happens when it's meant to, and it always seems like that happens to be the case. Mm-hmm. Maybe I just haven't needed it recently for whatever reason.
Cheyenne, thank you so much for sharing your stories.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening.
And
I really appreciate it.
If anything else weird happens, you know where to find us.
I'm sure there will be. I'll let you know.
All right.
Let's say I had a puppy, Allison.
Okay.
And he was being a naughty puppy.
That seems like it would track. It's your puppy, right?
Where would I go to get help with that puppy?
I would say 90 Days of the Perfect Puppy.
And what can they help me with?
Potty training, fear and nervousness, barking, chewing on furniture or shoes, crate training, hyperactivity issues, leash training, and more.
90 Days to the Perfect Puppy. They have a relationship-based approach that helps you and your puppy become perfect for each other. They have online sources like video lessons, a secret Facebook group. One-on-one options are available. You can find them at sithappens.us. Look for the 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy link at the top of the page. 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy can help you understand how your dog thinks and apply proactive training methods so you and your puppy can become perfect for each other. Again, that's 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy. You can find them at sithappens.us. Look for the 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy link at the top of the page. If you like what we do at Strange Familiars and you want to help support us and get more content, you can become a patron at Patreon. That's the best way to help us out. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. There's different tiers of support there, starting at $4 a month and going upwards. There's also yearly rates. If you sign up for a year, you actually pay less than $4 a month for that lowest tier. But there's other tiers there where you can get things like pins and stickers, books, and much more. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. No matter what tier you sign up at, though, all of our patrons get 2 extra episodes of Strange Familiars every month. Those are full extra episodes. There's close to 90 of them now. You get all of those as soon as you sign up, and then every month we'll be adding 2 more. So that's 2 exclusive episodes of Strange Familiars. Again, you can find that at patreon.com/strangefamiliars. And I want to thank all of our patrons for their help and support. We could not do Strange Familiars without you. So we have another stereo view.
We should maybe sell a viewer one day. Wouldn't that be helpful?
Oh, we probably should. We're probably going to manufacturing them, as many stereo views as we push.
Well, they do have sort of a modern day equivalent you can get.
Yeah.
Which is like a, I think they're made by, who's the guy from Queen? Is it Brian May?
Brian May.
Brian May is a huge stereo viewer collector.
Yes. He's published two books of his collections. One of them is the Diabolaries. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, Diabolaries, I guess. Yeah.
Which are really neat cards. They're like different scenes of devils and...
kind of like what goes on in hell.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of those originally were published as tissue backs, which means you hold them to the light. And they have this more dimensional aspect, and the coloring looks... they look really, really cool.
They're fragile as all get out, though. I mean, imagine tissue having to last 100 years.
Yeah, we have a couple tissue backs. Not Diabolaries, but a couple different ones. Mm-hmm. And they're so neat, and they're so fragile. Yeah.
But Brian May and his company, I think, came up with their own sort of modern day version of a stereo view. Or
oh, so, that's great. His other book has, it's just a town in the UK, I think, that he collected all the views of this town. Mm-hmm. And he published a book.
He actually has a personal curator that in charge of his photo collection, which is like...
well, if you were Brian May, you would too.
Yeah, but it's like my dream job to be... can you imagine like that was your job? I've actually seen that guy give talks and he's fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, the stereo view we have tonight is, it says it's fairies. So even though it looks like little two girls in dresses dancing, it's captioned as fairies. So we're going to say these are fairies because I'm going to believe the caption.
Yeah, we're not consulting Josh. We're just going to make the call.
Copyright 1899. Sometimes it amazes me how long stereo views were made.
You mean like when they started versus like when they ended?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
they were made like starting what, the 1860s, late 1860s? And they're still making them in the 1920s and 30s.
They had a long run.
Yeah.
TV wasn't around then.
Yeah. This is from 1899, The Fairies. Like I said, we're going to take them at their word. It's not two women dancing. It's fairies.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the show notes under this episode, you'll see an image of this. You can click on it. It'll take you right to our Etsy shop where you can purchase this and other curiosities of the week. Also in the Etsy shop, original artwork, prints of my artwork, Strange Familiars t-shirts, Strange Familiars stickers, copies of my books, including The Witch Cloud 2nd edition paperback is there, and much more. While you're on Etsy, make sure to check out Chad's shop, Ruck Rabbit Outdoors, and check out our friends at Karmic Garden as well. That's it for this episode of Strange Familiars. We'll be back soon with more. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts, music, books, art, podcasts, and more. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. If you want to hear more music or purchase music by Stone Breath, you can go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com. Strange Familiars is on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars, where you can join the Strange Familiars gathering group. We are on Instagram at Strange Familiars, one word, and you can always find us on the web at www.strangefamiliars.com.
I have the haunts of the sun.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.